Done making noises? I guess Yvonne's done making noises. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, July 1st, 2012. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here today. Hello, Yvonne.
Yo!
So, yeah, before we get into other things, I want to ask you the most crucial question of the week.
Mm.
What did you do with your leap second?
Oh gosh, this was the week of the leap second?
This was the leap second. It was yesterday.
I slept.
It was at 7 p.m. Eastern. You went to bed early.
I took advantage of it later for
7:59. What was it?
I had no idea that we had an extra leap second. I know
it was at 5 p.m. Pacific, so I guess that was 8 p.m.
I do know that we do that every once in a while. I had no idea. We just did it yesterday.
We did it yesterday. Everybody got an extra second. I hope you used it well.
I believe I probably did.
Yeah, I can't remember what I did.
I don't know. What the heck?
I think I was cleaning the house.
What the hell was I doing? Seven.
Eight. It was eight. I was wrong when I first
said eight. I was having dinner.
There you go. An extra savory bite of something yummy.
I had a ridiculously healthy eggplant parmesan.
Well, there you go.
With whole wheat pasta.
That sounds incredibly unappetizing.
It actually tasted quite good.
Okay.
Yep. So...
I'll also note that as lame as I am, we finally got our baby gifts out to you.
Oh!
Well, most of them.
I spent, yesterday, I don't know, collecting coupons and different things and, like, going through stuff and...
Because I'll tell you, I mentioned this a little bit last week, but I feel exceptionally lame, so I'm gonna, like, come out with my lameness in front of Yvonne. Like, because we had gone through, like, Brandy and I, when you first, like, set up your registry and stuff, or within a week or two or whatever, we'd looked through, we'd picked what we wanted, whatever, and then we were like, oh, it's way too damn early to send this.
And then you went to it now, and everything's, like, gone.
And then about a month ago, another friend of ours was having some baby stuff going on, and we took care of that, and then... At the time, my wife and I looked again, and I was like, oh, while you're at it, get Yvonne's stuff. Like, the stuff we looked at earlier. And so I went away thinking that it happened, and it actually hadn't happened. And so, like, then last week, we're like, oh, crap. Like, it's like a month before they're going to have their baby. We should, and like, you were here on the show talking about how you had the baby shower, and you were putting together all the baby shit, and I'm like, oh, crap, it's. And so we went and looked at the thing, and there's, like, nothing left on the damn list. There's, like, some diapers or something. I don't know
what the fuck it is.
Brandy texts me or whatever and basically says she cleared out the rest of your list.
Okay.
And then, because that, there wasn't that much left there, I think she grabbed some other stuff, too, but... I'm not sure. It's not what we intended. Like, because, like, way back when we picked something, we were like, this is really cool. It's off their list. They'll like that. It's, like, a fairly substantial thing. And then we end up getting a whole bunch of odds and ends and crap. So, sorry about that.
I'm sure they'll all come in handy. Thank you very much.
So. You're quite welcome.
Anyway. We were talking about this thing about these new cars. One of the things that we put together was the stroller, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And, I mean, I don't know if I mentioned this, but these strollers now, this feels like, it's like almost like a business class seat on a freaking airliner, man, damn thing. I mean, this is like, the only thing that's missing is, like I said, my buddy at the office said, couldn't you get one optional with, like, surround sound? I think you probably can. That would be kind of cool, actually. I thought about that. Are you out of your mind?
They do have a couple that just have, like, that have speakers and a headphone jack, so you can plug your iPod or whatever into it.
Wow. I don't have that one. So anyway, all right, but I,
Anyway, so the topic of the day is going to be the Supreme Court.
Yes, the topic of the day is
in this last week, there were a few rulings handed down. Most notably, of course, the healthcare ruling, but there were a couple others as well. So we're going to talk about a few of those, and you know, hey, neither one of us are lawyers, so while we might touch on some of the very high level legal stuff, for the most part, we're going to talk about implications and what.
Well, I mean, I did read, you know, not being a lawyer, but you know, being.
We'll touch on it. I'm not saying we won't.
I mean, there was a couple of quite interesting things that were writing the decision. I got to be honest. Okay. You know, that I thought. So let's.
Do you want to do healthcare first or immigration first?
No, let's go into the health law first.
Okay. So, bottom line on healthcare is it was upheld.
Yep.
There were some details of how of the Medicare stuff that were not, but bottom line, it was upheld.
Medicaid, sorry.
But bottom line, it was upheld, but not in the way that people kind of like thought. Nobody really predicted, because it was the four liberal members of the court plus John Roberts, and for reasons. They rejected the administration's argument that all of this was allowed via the Commerce Clause. It's one of these weird things. So, like, the liberal justices all accepted the Commerce Clause argument. All the conservative justices did not. The John Roberts, the swing vote in this case, also did not accept the Commerce Clause.
Right.
However, John Roberts did accept that things were okay based on the taxing authority of the Congress. So his okay based on the taxing authority, plus the four liberal okays based on the Commerce Clause and the taxing authority, means 5-4, it stays.
But you know what? I got to tell you something. I got to agree with John Roberts. He's totally right. Look, my one thing that I kept thinking about the whole time when they were trying to justify this using the Commerce Clause, okay, was that I kept thinking, you know what? Insurance in the United States is not national, okay? Right. Insurance is a state-regulated activity. All health insurers are incorporated as individual companies in every state. As far as I remember, they're all like separated, and there's a separate state insurance regulator that regulates insurance. Okay, and insurance for everything, whether it's for auto, for this, for that. I mean, it's not a national activity. It's really regulated state by state. And that's why I kept going, and I kept thinking about it.
The thing is, though, 75 years of Supreme Court precedent up until this ruling have basically been going further and further in the direction of interstate commerce actually covers all commerce. And because everything is commerce, it covers everything. So it had been interpreted very, very broadly in the past.
I agree.
Basically,
but I think, and a lot of times it's been stretched way too much of the fact that we've been using that for a lot of stuff that probably was not.
Yeah. I'm one who, in general, and I'll talk about here some of the exceptions, but in general, I'm for more limited government involvement in these things. I think there's a lot of things the federal government is in, for that matter, state and local governments too, but here specifically the federal government, that they just shouldn't be messing with.
Well, I'll give you examples of some stuff that's interstate that I feel are interstate commerce that somehow aren't, like right now, for example, because there's it goes both ways. Okay.
Yeah.
Think about driver's licenses.
Yes.
Why the hell are they state? Our highways are all interconnected. Almost everybody in this country goes and drives across state lines. Our highways are totally interconnected as a nation. Are you going to tell me that's not interstate commerce?
Okay, I can see that argument.
You have a trucking company moves loads around this nation. Is that not interstate commerce? Why should those drivers? I go and I see, for example, Hertz figured out a loophole. I just realized recently, for example, that apparently Tennessee taxes less than every other state in order to own a fleet of rental cars. So almost every rental car sitting here in the state of Florida has a license plate in Tennessee. I've noticed from Hertz.
Okay.
Okay? I mean, you're going to tell me that's not interstate commerce? Why should that license plate, why am I having a car here, regulated by another state, okay, that can freely move around here? If that's not interstate commerce, then what the fuck is?
Okay, I can see that. Now,
but on the flip side, health insurance is almost, the insurance regulators are all state. The guarantees and if you have to sue regarding it is all state based. If an insurance company collapses, it's backed up by the state of where
but
that.
But now part of the question comes. Here though is does it have to be that way? Like if the federal government decided to say insurance regulations will be national from now on, is it allowed?
I don't know. I don't know, but
because
the reality
you could do some of the same arguments, regardless of what it is now with insurance. Isn't it crazy that state by state, in this day and age, most people change states on a regular basis?
I agree, but at this point it is.
Not on a regular basis, but several times in a lifetime.
And I keep thinking, like, not interstate. Like, for example, the rules that govern me building a house here in Florida. Well, that's really state. I mean, there's nothing that has to do with anything regarding in any other state. This is here. It's local. I mean, you know.
But once again, the argument becomes, should it be? Like, isn't there an argument that says, for instance, safety codes? Why the hell aren't those national?
But there are not but in a lot of cases, the safety that's important here is not the same safety that applies in Colorado, or is not the same.
Absolutely, you've got hurricanes there. You've got fires in Colorado. You've got earthquakes on the West Coast.
Exactly.
Different safety questions, but that could be codified nationally if you're in a hurricane risk zone. Blah.
As we have developed the federal system, we've developed the federal system, I think, to allow the states to be able to flexibility to modify those laws.
To be clear here, I'm playing devil's advocate.
I know. But in general, it's like,
I'm in favor of regulating at the lowest possible level.
Yes. And I think that there are certain things that are, but the reality is that the way that this law was structured, John Roberts is right. It's definitely a tax. It certainly is. It is. You either you do certain activity, or you have to pay tax penalties for it.
But you know, a lot of people have pointed out as well, from a logical point of view, you could structure almost anything that way.
Yeah, you could.
You don't.
I think. But I'll tell you what, he's right.
You know.
And wait a minute. But there are a lot of things that are like that.
Yeah.
I mean, what you said is correct. That's why the power to tax has always been so broad.
Right. And so the question then becomes, are you actually restricting jack shit if you just say the government can still do whatever the hell it wants, it just has to do it under this provision instead of that provision?
But I think it's correct. Think about what happened with the tanning salons. You remember that whole thing? When they passed the health law.
It is actually part of the health care laws that there's a 10% additional tax on tanning salons.
That's correct. Yes. I mean, that was a tax. The federal government decided to tax fucking tanning salons. And you know what? It's perfectly within the rights of Congress.
And that put a major crimp in your style.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my color is just pale white right now.
Yeah.
I will say this, that what I saw is a whole lot of them go out of business.
Right.
Which was the intent of the whole thing in the first place, by the way.
Yes, because they were very unhealthy.
Now, right.
But now, one thing I want to make clear, too, and in a lot of coverage of this kind of thing, this gets all muddled together. And I'm actually, like, encouraged whenever the court makes a decision that's more procedural. Is there are two entirely separate questions here.
Yep.
One is whether this law is a good idea.
That has nothing to do with what the court was doing.
Right. One question is whether the law is a good idea. Is this something the government should be doing? The second question is, were the right procedures followed to do it? Does the way that we did it follow within the structures that we've set up to allow for these things? Does Congress have this power? And that sort of thing. And I think it's very healthy to separate these things, because a lot of people, when they're discussing this, are rooting for you know, uphold the law or slam down the law or uphold the law or slam down the law based on whether or not they want the law in this case. Well, that's not a relevant question.
I know. And that's been the whole thing all this week.
That question is relevant when Congress is debating it. That question is relevant when the president is getting ready to sign or veto it. Once it's signed into law, the question is about procedurally, based on the procedures that are defined by our Constitution, was this done in a proper way? Is this allowed? And it's no longer a question of the merits of the law. It's a question of, was it done in a way that's allowed?
I think, you know, the other part that I guess to a certain extent, I think is the main reason why I think Justice Roberts is being the Chief Justice, okay? I think he, to a certain extent, I mean, when you're making a decision like this, one of the things that you're trying to balance is, you know, defer to the legislature to a certain extent when they pass a law to do something.
Right, okay? And by the way, conservatives are really upset here because John Roberts did a conservative thing, which is basically say, this is Congress's power. I'm not going to be an activist court and overrule Congress.
Correct. And that's what he did. And a lot of people are hopping mad just because of that. But I think that, you know, in essence, what he looked to do was to allow Congress, look, you passed the law. This was your intent. If you don't want it, change it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that one of the reasons why the Republicans are so fucking pissed off is because I guess they've seen that it was probably incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to repeal it because, let's face it, they have not gotten their act together as to what the fuck they want anyway, if it's not this. Well, and so I think that they were counting to a big extent on it being able to not withstand the legal challenge. Now it didn't withstand the legal challenge, and they're left with the cat holding the bag because they've got don't have fucking nothing to propose.
It did withstand, but like the there are a couple things though. Even when Romney's been talking, he's been like, "I want to repeal Obamacare, but I'll keep this, I'll keep this, I'll keep this, I'll keep this."
Yeah, it's just retarded.
You know, which is the majority of what was there. He specifically, of course, is against the mandate, but if you take out the mandate and leave all those other things, the whole thing collapses in a mess. Because you can't, for instance, say no pre-existing conditions, you have to accept everybody if you give everybody the choice of not having insurance until they get sick.
Right, the insurance companies will be in a fucking uproar, because that was one of the things why they are actually, for the most part, fine with the law as it stands, because what they're balancing is okay, great. Well, so I can't block off these people.
They're more than fine with this law. I mean, if you remember, by the time we got to the end of this process, the insurance companies were all for it.
Exactly, I know, because to them it makes total sense.
It requires people to buy insurance, for God's sake. It's a money train for them.
Yes, absolutely. So
This could have easily been renamed, you know, the Insurance Company of America Profit Act. You know, this was designed in such a way to make the insurance companies very, very happy. You know, yes, it put some restrictions on them, but they were balanced by things that on par, when you added everything together, made the is guaranteed to make the insurance companies shit tons of money. Now, do the same guarantees exist for everybody else in the healthcare industry? Not necessarily. The insurance companies had a better lobby, but and some people were talking about how if this was struck down, it's sort of this. Well, then the only choice is single payer. Yeah.
Right.
not that could have realistically got passed either with our existing Congress, but anyway. Should we take a break?
Let's take a break. Yes.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back and talk about more interesting ramifications and things related to this same stuff. We're going to be talking about Supreme Court for a while. We'll be right back.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
We're back. Okay. So,
go ahead.
You know, what I think, you know, if you look at, you know, when we could, where you said we're going to talk about immigration and the other stuff like later, but I look, the conservatives this week were fucking like on a fucking like, I mean, their head was about to explode. Okay, this week with the decisions of the Supreme Court, because
Roberts joked that he was very glad that he'd agreed for a summer gig teaching in Malta so he could get the hell out of here. you know, and not have to answer all the questions about this.
Oh gosh, I gotta give him credit for that one. You know, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, look, we historically, okay, all right, the Supreme Court has had some decisions here and there where they've caught a lot of heartburn to certain people. Like, we talked about Citizens United and some of the other stuff and whatever and whatnot. But I think, look, the Supreme Court is not hostage to the same political realities as everybody else, okay? And they want to look at the law and, you know, I think that historically what they have shown is that they're trying to uphold the Constitution as it is for the most part.
Of course they are trying, but depending on the makeup of the court, that means very different things.
Right, but you know, I think that the Chief Justices usually see their role a little bit different, okay? And, you know, John Roberts saw that, you know, he is the Chief Justice of this court. The decision what it could have made, you know, it was a difference between picking being a very activist court and like actually striking down what Congress's intent was and the elected people, or, you know what, basically saying, no, they decided to do this. This is the reason. If you don't want it, let the elected people go and change it.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of things Robert said when he was getting confirmed that people weren't really thinking would be true, and frankly, for most of his history so far, haven't really been true. But he said that he was going to generally defer to the will of Congress. I mean, he didn't use those words exactly, but it was all about not being an activist court. And not being an activist court means essentially respecting precedent when it's been set, and being willing to defer in a lot of cases to, unless there's something especially egregious,
right.
Okay, that's what Congress wanted, you know, and
right.
And it fits within the general parameters. And also, he stated stuff about wanting to generate more consensus on the court and have there be less 5-4 decisions. Of course, this was a 5-4 decision, just with him on the surprising side.
But however, if you think about it, like, I think there was a record that I saw this week that north of 50% of decisions in the Supreme Court were 9-0.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's the question, of course. It's easy to be 9-0 on the easier questions, you know.
Right.
But,
well, but even like the immigration decision was a 6-3 decision.
Right.
By the way. Okay. You know, so if we go into that decision, which that was, I mean, the entire Arizona law, except the verification of people's immigration status, basically got struck down. But even that, the court basically said, you know what, you guys didn't challenge it in the right thing, okay, by the way, but if it's found out that it is by racial profile and discrimination and somebody can show it, that thing gets struck down too. By the way, which was basically what the Supreme Court said, by 6-3, okay, which basically told the fucking Arizonans to take the fucking thing and just shove it up their ass. It's so unconstitutional, you can't even, like, you know, it wound up being a 6-3 decision.
Although that was, You're right. This was one of the more subtle ones because they're talking about. I mean, both sides claimed victory on that one.
Both sides claimed victory. You know, look, if the other side claimed victory on that, it's because they were on drugs. Okay, on that law, they got completely crushed. The first part of that law, which is the only thing that remained standing, was a standard practice by a lot of police departments already. Okay, I had actually checked on this. All the police departments already could check the immigration status of somebody and call ICE, immigration.
And you know this because they try to deport you every time you get pulled over.
Well, no, I know this because my brother lives on the damn border. Okay, yeah, all right.
I'm teasing you. God damn
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, of course I didn't get called, but my brother has. But anyway, you know, that's the reality. What's been happening before. You didn't need to write a stupid law to put that into work.
Does your brother have to like carry around his passport or something to avoid issues?
You know what? He doesn't. But I'll tell you this. I mean, one time we were driving from McAllen, we were going to San Antonio, and we got pulled over at an INS checkpoint because they're allowed to check immigration status up until like about 50 miles from the border, and they asked my wife, who specifically was not a citizen, to show her green card.
Well, for non-citizens, you're supposed to carry around that stuff anyway, right?
Yes, but we were all said all citizens except this person. They said, you know, need to see your documentation. So I'd
be more interested in if the citizens were harassed in that case, because like I said, then
we were merely asked, and we replied.
The non-citizens are actually required to do that. So the question
here's the thing, you know what? Those guys, you could say whatever you want. If you say you're a citizen, they're not supposed to keep pestering about you. Period. That's it.
They don't have the right to ask for additional documentation.
No.
Then what the hell's the? I don't know, because then anybody could say, "Yeah, I'm a citizen."
Well, yeah, but you know, how people are. They get nervous and whatever, so they're like, you know. So I think that if they determine that there's some suspicious, like, I guess if they have some probable cause or something or whatever, they can keep digging.
So like, if you say yes, you're a citizen, but say so in a heavy accent. But
I think that what they do is that they can take your driver's license, and there's ways for them to be able to do a verification, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But they didn't ask us for any more documents. Once we just said, yeah, we are. And they didn't ask us, any of us, for our documents. But, I mean, but my point is that had already been leaked. Okay, all right. So, everything else that they did is they try to criminalize people finding work. They try to criminalize all this stuff based on racist data or whatever. And they were told, you know what? No, that's the purview of the federal government. You can't do that. That's it.
Well, there you go. So I guess we're running through all of the opinions we care about this time before we talk about political implications and such. But there was a third one you mentioned that I hadn't heard of.
Let me look it up, the name, because the Stolen Valor Act is what it was called.
Is this the one where pretending you have medals you don't have?
That's correct.
Okay, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
And that one was struck down in its entirety, basically, because what they said is that people can lie. And it's cut protected speech. You know? I mean, that's it.
Yeah, okay.
You know? I mean, that was it. I mean, they said, look, Can a person get fired because they relied on a resume or whatever? But it's just because you lied on your resume doesn't make it a criminal act. Okay. Right. So what they said is that, you can claim to have all the medals you want. It's just because you lied, it's protected free speech. Okay. So that's what that was all about. I thought it was just quite interesting.
Seems reasonable to me.
Yeah. So the Supreme Court protected our right to lie, okay, which is good, I guess. I mean, you know.
Did this precedent also effectively strike down things like impersonating a policeman? There's some public safety things in place there that probably the answer is
yeah,
no.
Yeah, I think that probably they could carry it on some other – I mean, they can't get you – but, you know.
That's not just speech if you're using it to blah, blah, blah.
Correct, right.
It probably does Well,
I mean, look, if you're walking around wearing a police uniform, that's not a problem. Right. If you break into a place wearing a police uniform...
Or if you stop somebody's car on the highway.
Car on the road, like we had actually.
Then it's not just speech, you're doing an act. So
exactly. Right. Okay.
But if you want to wear a policeman outfit for Halloween, you're cool. And you probably always have been.
And you always have. Exactly. So that was that. So election, I mean, I don't know. I got to think that this, I mean, my take is that this is probably all positive for the Obama reelection, to be honest with you. I don't see how it's a negative.
So, yeah, here's two things that are based on that. And, of course, it's really early. We'll have to see what happens. One, in the past, when there have been Supreme Court rulings on controversial issues, support for the thing that was upheld tends to increase after the Supreme Court has validated what it was.
Okay.
Now, that there are only a handful of examples of this, and, you know, polling is polling, and who the fuck knows. But so if that happens this time, it may mean that the support level for the healthcare law increases, you know, over the next couple months. Now, this is important because the healthcare law is still, frankly, very unpopular. Now, the liberal...
But those numbers have been improving, by the way, all right? Is what I saw, but as we're leading up to the decision.
They have been improving some, but not much, and still the overwhelming number of people don't like it. Now, the Democratic line all along has been they don't like it because they really don't understand it, and they're hearing a lot of FUD from the Republican side, and once it takes effect, then they'll like it. But now the thing is, it's scheduled to continue to take effect over the next few years, you know, so... It'll be a while till it's all in place, and who knows where we'll be by that point and what people will feel. What matters at the moment is the next couple months.
Right.
You know, and the Democrats have been criticized time and time again for not going out and selling this damn thing. You know, they did what they needed to do to ram the law through Congress. It was all about lobbying Congress at that point. Now, they didn't really do a whole lot of lobbying the American people, although they did a little bit. And since then, you know, like the Obama administration basically dropped the subject and moved on to other things.
Right.
Now, on the one hand, people have talked about this as being Obama's inclination to, well, that's done. I'm going to work on the things that need to be done next. But at the same time, people have rightly pointed out that it left the whole public thinking, here's some healthcare law that got rammed down our throats. I don't really know what it is, but it sounds scary.
Yeah, I know, which I keep going and I keep having these discussions with people that are just bizarre. They keep telling me, well, because the law is going to increase cost. I'm like, no. But because the law is going to take away my health care. No. Because the law – I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm going by the fourth item that they tell me. I'm like, did you read any of it? Or are you just watching, like, I don't know what program – I don't know what the – I guess what they're watching.
So by the way – I tweeted on Twitter.
Tweeted on Twitter.
Anyway, something that was going.
Which means you tweeted.
I tweeted.
Okay, there you go. All right.
Anyway, a link to an article that was going around on Facebook. Actually, my mom posted it to a Reddit post where someone went through. They call it explain it to me like I'm five. But posted like a summary of what the law does and doesn't do in very simple terms.
Right, sure.
It's worth reading. If you don't have an idea what it is, you know, check my Twitter feed. I posted it yesterday, I think.
A tweet. I'm sorry. Not a tweet.
Different than a twat.
Yes, very different than a twat. Yes, it's very different.
Anyway, the link is listed under what exactly is Obamacare and what did it change. Worth taking a look at if you haven't already got that. Anyway, the bottom line, though, is A, the support may increase over the next couple months. Second is the argument that Republicans have to make here is one that is somewhat of a hard argument, depending on whether the Democrats do a good job at defending their side. Because the Republican argument is basically, this is an unwarranted intrusion of government into your life. But the Democratic argument is, look, this keeps people from getting rejected for pre-existing conditions. This gets more people covered. It keeps more people healthy. It'll reduce your costs overall. You know, and this is a lot of benefits that will, you know, from the point of view of the receiver of the coverage, are like, that doesn't sound bad.
And if the thing is that I keep going, it's like this other person's got, it's like fucking communism and socialism. I'm like going, okay, so you're telling me Newt Gingrich is a fucking communist? What do you mean? This fucking law is basically what they proposed in the fucking 90s in order to, like, go against the Clinton health plan.
Yeah,
exact basically. Same law. So you're fucking telling me that Gingrich is a communist? Well, I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, you know what? You don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
And that is one of the points that's there, of course, and makes it hard for Romney, of course, is because this basically is Romney's plan out of
Massachusetts.
But he proposed
in Massachusetts as well. And I'm like going, okay, you're telling me that the fucking guys are all communists. Great. So fucking Mitt Romney's a communist. Gingrich is a communist. Okay? And all the other fucking people. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And I'm like, I keep going, the only reason why they all, it's just for political expediency. Don't give me this crap. Okay? All right? It's got nothing to do with nothing. Okay? I mean, I'm just,
You know, and this is one of those things, too. I mean, we've had debates here, and I'm certainly not a diehard libertarian, but I generally follow the principle of I'd rather not have government doing things if we have a good alternative. But I'll tell you, there are a couple of exceptions that, like, I look at right away and say, well, maybe the government should be involved in that. And those are healthcare and education.
Mm.
You know, because
the other day, I keep hearing about all these people. Oh, my God, I paid for all these fucking taxes. And look, I did, too. Look, this year I got, look, I paid a stupid amount in taxes, okay? But you know what? The other day I'm just sitting around. I'm like looking, okay, so what am I getting for this, right? Well, I got fucking roads out there. There's police. There's fire. There's schools. There's airports. There's, I mean, I'm looking at all this stuff that I am, like, looking that it pays for, right?
Of course, mostly what you're paying for is interest on the debt and the defense industry.
No,
and
no.
Medicare.
Well, no, that's, wait. No, okay, now you had it. And Social Security and Medicare. But hey, both of my parents get that. Okay?
Yeah.
So both my parents have health care and income, okay, that they get every fucking month, okay? I mean, so, I'm like, you know, if people keep saying, like, I'm getting fucking nothing from government. Really? Could you look around for a second? I mean, who the fuck was going to build all these fucking roads to get to all these places if it wasn't for the government right now? We'd wind up with some really... You know, the decisions that would wind up, because if all the roads were for profit, would be quite weird. Okay, all right? That's what I think, okay? And, you know, and quite a lot of people would not be able to get to their low-paying jobs because of it either. You know, I don't know. I think, look... I don't know. There's multiple ways of getting stuff done. I don't like taxes either, but yet at the same time, don't fucking tell me that we don't get nothing for our taxes, okay? And especially in this country, okay? I can go to other countries where I know people get taxed like at twice or three times the rate as we do, and they don't get shit, okay? I mean, we actually got schools where I can send kids to, for God's sakes. There's actually universities that people can go with subsidies. There's, like, subsidies for you to get a home mortgage. There's, like, subsidies for you to get a college education. It's getting more expensive. It's kind of tough and whatever, whatnot. But still, anyway, there's healthcare for the poor, okay? Now, there isn't for everybody, and there's gaps, and there's problems, you know. Well, there's a fucking military that apparently everybody likes to send all over the fucking joint to go and fight wars. Okay? You know, not for nothing. Okay? Especially the fucking Republicans, which love to spend money on it like there's no tomorrow. Okay? I mean, how many trillions of dollars have we spent on defense in the last, like, 30 or 40 years?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I don't, you know. Look.
So, I this is one of those areas where there's a map that's been going around about sort of you know, countries that have universal health care and those that don't. And basically the entire, you know, first world, most of the second world, you know, it's like the folks who don't are basically the third world countries that really are fairly poor compared to, you know, all the rich countries basically have universal health care.
Yes.
We don't. And this is what, like I said, big government, I don't generally like it. I think whenever the private industry can do things, it's probably better. But healthcare is one of those things where I look at that and I'm like, look, right now, if I came down with a dread disease tomorrow, it could financially ruin me, even with the insurance I have.
Mm-hmm.
It could mean that, you know, if I came down with a horrible disease that, you know, let's say I came down with a bad cancer. You know, I could be fighting that for years and still die. And in the meantime, I'm going to be bankrupted. My family's going to be screwed. And, you know, and is that really what we want?
You know, for the last 50 years, let's see, how many, I believe President Nixon, who's a Republican, was a champion for universal health care.
Yeah.
You know, let's see, who else? We've had a number of presidents. Truman was for trying to get universal health care. I can't remember was it Reagan or the first Bush that originally passed this catastrophic health care bill, which meant to try to pay for people exactly the situations that you talked about.
Even George W. Bush increased prescription coverage.
Even George W. Bush, he increased, you know. Exactly. Yeah, he did that. So, I mean, don't tell me that. I mean, I hear this and I'm like, really? I mean, you know, I don't know. And by the way, I thought that at the time, I mean, the only reason why I agree with it, the problem that I said at the time was that he keeps talking about how to save money and generated that huge entitlement. Which, you know, I think in the long run was right in terms of like healthcare and like accessibility to people, because I think it actually costs less in the long run to be giving people medication that they should be needing, instead of like you see many elderly patients before that could not afford medication, so therefore wound up in worse emergency care.
Right.
So I think that in the end it balances out, but you know it was an increased cost.
Well, that is of course the trick with all this stuff. It's benefits that people look at and say, oh, my, that would be a great benefit. It would be wonderful if everybody had that. But how the fuck do you pay for it? And in the end, the answer might be more taxes.
That's right. You know? So yeah. So anyway,
Let's take another break, and then let's wrap it up with a few other thoughts, and then we'll be out of here. Let's wrap a little bit of break. We'll be right back. And here we are. One thing I've been meaning to like either do a post or talk about here for a while is I've been coming to a slow realization in my own political thought, because for the longest time, you know, I was basically speaking a lot in very libertarian ways. You know, government shouldn't do this, government shouldn't do that, government shouldn't do that, blah, 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 blah. And again, I've always had sort of a soft spot for a couple exceptions for maybe education and healthcare and those kinds of things. But I've been coming to the realization recently, like, because I've talked a lot about, like, executive power is getting too much. There's too much the president can do by himself without going through Congress, whatever. The common thread for me really is limitations on concentrations of power, period. Whether it be in the private sector or the public sector or wherever. So, like, breaking up big monopolies or even just big companies, I'm okay with that. Even though it's a massive, messing around with the private sector, making it so that the president has less power and can do less things on his own and has to get the approval of Congress, I'm all for that. I think the common thread for me is whenever a small group of people have a amazingly disproportionate amount of influence over what's going on and everybody else's lives. That's an area where I think it's an appropriate area to step in with additional regulation or rules to break up that power. And I don't
care
if that power is the president, or whether it's Microsoft, or whether it's an oil company, or whether it's like some nonprofit group that just has a disproportionate influence. That's where I think, and I haven't fully fleshed through all this, but I think that over the last month or so, I've sort of had that revelation that, like, to me, the issue is excessive concentrations of power, and wherever that happens, public or private, I think that should be broken up.
Think about, for example, 20 or 25 years ago, I think it is around that time, the breakup of AT&T. It was about 27 years ago.
Yeah.
If the government hadn't broken up AT&T the way that it did, think about how uncompetitive our telecommunications space would be at this point, okay, as a country.
Right.
We would be having a lot of the same issues that Mexico has, for example, where they still have a de facto monopoly by Telmex. Where in Mexico, okay, they've never broken up that monopoly, okay, and they pay for telephone rates far more than we do with substantially less services than we do, okay? And it shouldn't be like that, because in almost all other countries in which there's a big competitive space, there's far more competition and lower prices. I think that when the government, when there is an activity like that, that all of a sudden that is very important to the national interest, in which one company all of a sudden takes, you know, a position in which almost no competition exists and therefore stifles innovation, I think the government needs to take an active hand, because it's just, I mean, it is really, you know, it affects the economy of the country in the long run, and something needs to be done in order to be able to affect it. I mean, I am a very big free market person, so I am like, you know, I don't want the government to get themselves into a lot of stuff. But in things, for example, where it's like protecting our money in the banks, okay, to make sure that it's there. When it is about protecting us from a monopoly, which manages to squeeze us, you know, in a way that is uncompetitive, then I think that the government needs to get involved. Okay. Outside of that, I want them to just, you know, allow most people to do, you know, things independently.
So and so, like, what this is bringing me to is sort of on the government side, I think all decisions should be made at the lowest level possible. Like, if it can be done on a local level, by God's sake, please do. If it can be done on a state level, please do.
Right.
If it has to be done on a federal basis, let's do it through Congress if we at all can.
Right.
And like, reserve to the president alone only those things where we really have no other choice.
Right.
Because I don't want one guy, like, making substantial... Yeah, I mean, it's unavoidable that the president is going to make some decisions that are very substantial and have a lot of impact. But I want to reduce that as much as possible, make it so that, you know, he can't do things on his own authority very much. He has to have authority given to him, and it's temporary authority that's removed and things like that. On the private side, certainly monopolies. But I'm starting to think, you know, at a certain point, monopoly or not, maybe we should have like a maximum size for a company. Yeah.
Well, I mean, sometimes
you hit that size, you get broken up. Done.
Beyond a certain percentage of GDP, because one of the things, like, Jamie Dimon went the other day, and I was like, it was so ludicrous when he said this. He went and he said that, you know, we massively bailed out the banks like close to four years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Jamie Dimon disingenuously goes in front of everybody and says, "Oh, well, if Chase goes down, the taxpayers will not be paying for it." I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, which planet did he step off of? I mean, if a bank of the size of Chase, which has over $1 trillion worth of assets, goes down, you bet your fucking ass the people holding the bag are going to be the fucking taxpayers. Okay?
Yeah.
That's for damn fucking sure. Demi, don't give me that crap that we're not holding the bag. We're fucking holding the bag. So, we did already once. So,
yeah, and this goes back to, I guess, Bernie Sanders was the one who said it in Congress, you know, too big to fail is too big to exist. And I'm starting to believe that more and more.
I agree. Yeah.
And not only that, but like, people worry, you hear the counter argument that, oh, you're restricting the private enterprise. Honestly, when things get too big, you know, innovations get stifled. It moves more slowly. They don't innovate. It's like, you know, you mentioned AT&T from the as a prime example. The same thing was true of the oil trusts. But even in like medium to large size companies, you see the difference in culture between a large Fortune 500 company and smaller, more nimble companies. And you know, from an investor's point of view, frankly, I mean, like the. I bet you if you were a pre-breakup investor of AT&T and you just held everything, you're pretty damn happy right now.
Oh, fuck yeah. You're thrilled to pieces.
Of everything.
If you held everything that came out of that, yes, absolutely. No doubt about that. I mean,
and some of them failed, but like for the most part, you know, you're probably better off as an investor in AT&T post-breakup than you would have been if they hadn't broken it up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably true in most of these cases. Like, you know, imagine if they, here's an example out of the blue. Let's say they broke up Apple.
Right.
You know, Apple's a very successful company doing good things, blah, blah, blah. But like, you know, frankly, a lot of the rest of the PC industry is having trouble competing on iPads and iPhones and stuff. You broke Apple in half, gave both halves equal access to the intellectual property that came from before, and see which way they run with it. You'll see some competition then.
Well, I think the one thing is that the other companies are pretty big enough. Here's a problem.
No, I know. I'm saying this is a case where
it's a good example, and I agree that probably making a smaller, nimbler Apple at the size that it's getting to may make
this
it
is
more
not a case where there's a monopoly. Apple doesn't have a monopoly on anything.
Not
yet.
At all.
Although they may be coming close in a couple areas now, but like, but this is an area where there's no monopoly. But if you did break them up. And if you were an owner in Apple stock, the sub pieces that came out of that would probably all do really well, and you'd get more dynamic competition pushing the technology further even faster. So, like, it might be good for everybody as a whole, and even for the damn owners of Apple. You know, they may not want that because they want control, but in the end, I don't know. And this is where I come into conflict, and this is where, like, the old me from a couple years ago wouldn't even consider this. I'd be like, that is far overreach of government. Like, yeah, I want to limit government. I don't want government to have those kinds of powers. Now I'm like, you know, it's not about government versus not government. It's about limiting places where there's a concentration of power, and you know, big companies are one place where there's a concentration of power influence. So I'm maybe okay here. And I don't know. I'm still evolving on this. People are free to write in and tell me where I'm full of shit. But
okay. All right. Well, you know, we've perfectly used up a whole bunch of time. So let's get the show
out of here.
Play.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening. You know, I should like record this last little bit and just have it as one of the spots that I circulate. But email me at applesmay@applesmay.com if you have any questions, comments, or thoughts. And share us on all your social media and tell your friends, all that kind of stuff. And that's it for this week for Curmudgeon's Corner. We'll see you in another week. So goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Later, Yvonne.